are so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
I mean, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, May 11th, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio today by our vegan animal rights advocate host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Our show today features an interview with local animal rights lawyer, Anna Pippis, for our Mother's Day show dedicated to moms-to-be, all the pregnant ladies out there. I have encountered so many pregnant women lately. How about you, Allison?
Well, on the Ellen DeGeneres show yesterday, her whole audience was pregnant women.
So oh, wow. That's,
I was in contact with them virtually. It was interesting. They had an EMT on site just in case.
So on this show, we're going to be discussing healthy vegan diets for pregnancy and beyond, as well as highlight the mothers in the dairy industry and what their lives are like. Stay tuned for an interview with Anna Pippis. She's the animal rights lawyer coming up in the next few minutes. But for now, we just want to carry on our spring member drive at Co-op Radio. We rely on you generous donors to help us run the station.
And today is one of those days. I'm really looking forward to our interview with Anna Pippis. But also on the end of our member drive, if you're inspired by what we do, as Jen, you were talking about a few weeks ago, like some people don't have the time to advocate for animals with their time, like we do, right? So if you don't have, this is, and I believe in this too, is like if you don't have the time and effort to make, then please donate. And you can donate with money because that's the accepted form of currency at Co-op Radio.
Even if it's $5 a month.
That's what I do.
It really helps us.
Yeah, that's what I do. A membership, so we're a cooperative, right? And we say that you can take out a membership, but it counts as a donation as well because we are a registered nonprofit charity. And all you have to do is go to cooperadio.org and there's a little button on the top right-hand side that says donate here. And you can do either a sustaining membership, which is what I do every month. There's some money, it comes out of my bank account and I barely even notice it. And we like sustaining memberships because that gives Co-op Radio guaranteed income. They're able to forecast what their budget will be in the next year, right? So it provides a stability to keep the radio station running and Animal Voices running. So as Jen said, $5 a month or whatever you feel so inclined, you get a tax receipt. So.
And I just want to say what I really like about our station is that as I've become involved in animal rights activism, it's given me an opportunity to notice how the mainstream media often misses the point when it comes to telling stories about animals that are being mistreated or even killed. And
yeah,
when we're on this station, we get an opportunity to interview experts and give them a very long period of time to tell the whole story. And on mainstream media, a lot gets edited out and sometimes the message is given completely backwards.
It's very
frustrating. And I like this show, not only Animal Voices, but a lot of the other hundreds of shows that are on this station. We all get an opportunity for a full hour to interview an expert in a field and not, you know, cut them out for commercial breaks or anything like that.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. The mainstream media for sure has limitations. Time is one of them. And another one is that they have to be accountable to their sponsors and the people that pay their commercials. We're commercial free, so we don't have that. We can say what we want here.
Well, a prime example is when the Vancouver Aquarium was being halted by the park board to continue to display performing animals, and every single media outlet that I encountered was saying that that meant that animals had to be killed in the wild rather than rescued and rehabilitated. That wasn't the case.
It was completely false.
And I was sending media releases to these outlets and saying this is not the case. You need to not this is very unethical to be misprinting facts. And to this day, Allison, we are still struggling with that myth that's going around this city, and activists are getting a bad name for it. So it is problematic, and it's really important to fund a radio station where we do get the truth out and there's none of that bias.
Yes, for sure. So remember, cooperadio.org, you can make us a donation of any amount, and we would appreciate that so much. We do have to raise funds here because we're listener-supported to keep Animal Voices on the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we have some news. It's official. Mexico City has banned dolphinariums. As of May 5th, 2018, owners of dolphinariums will have 6 months to transfer dolphins and sea lions to sanctuaries. These companies must comply with the relocation of specimens, in which case the habitat of destination and the conditions of the specimens must be evaluated by the proper authorities. Also, Delphinoterapia is prohibited since, according to Green Ecologist Party, there is no scientific evidence that these animals help as effective treatment to people. I'm guessing this is some kind of a therapy rehab place using dolphins. I remember seeing a show on that years ago and thinking it was a great idea. This is before I was more educated on captivity and capture of animals. The companies or persons who do not comply with the provisions on the exploitation of these marine mammals will be entitled to fines ranging from 113,000 to 300,000 pesos for those who continue to use these marine mammals. A new documentary is due to come out soon, following the trend in animal rights films over the past decade. After a star-studded premiere at Sundance and the international premiere at the Berlin Film Festival, the official Game Changers movie trailer is now available online. The forthcoming film, directed by Academy Award winner Luis Fizos, 2009's The Cove, which showed the dolphin capture industry, and produced by Academy Award winner James Cameron of the Titanic and Avatar, follows James Wilkes, elite special forces trainer and winner of The Ultimate Fighter, as he travels the world on a quest for the truth behind the world's most dangerous myth that meat is necessary for protein, strength, and optimal health. I'm really looking forward to this. I work in healthcare with professional athletes, and the protein myth is pretty strong still, isn't it, Allison?
Yeah, but I think things are changing, and I'm so looking forward to this film coming out. In fact, I want to host a film screening about it, so I'm going to be contacting them about that.
Me too. The date has yet to be announced, but I think we're all Googling every single day to
well,
see when it comes out.
Well, there'll be a date. Yeah, so their host, like, people will need to host them. So
absolutely.
I'm going to try to do that because I want everyone to see this film.
Well, I can fit 40 in my living room.
I'm looking at, this is going to attract hundreds of people because I think there's a lot of anticipation about this film. It's big filmmakers, and like James Cameron's name is on it. And there's some other, our local Brendan Brazier, he's an associate producer on the film as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's great.
I was looking on the website. And Dotsie Bausch, who we interviewed on the show several months ago, she's featured on it as well, and she said that she would like to come here for a screening, so
awesome.
That would be cool.
Well, here's a quote from Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's featured in the film. No one can relate to it better than I do because I lived in that world, he says, of his competitive days and the reliance on animal products to build his body. The former action star has recently become outspoken about his shift away from animal products. And in other news, writer, director, and comedian Kevin Smith said he's now very vegan and has lost 32 pounds since his recent heart attack, having been told it was likely his diet that caused the attack. The blockage, according to Smith's doctor, was caused in large part by a lifetime of bad eating habits, which led to his nutritionist prescribing a plant-based diet. Explaining that a plant-based diet is proven to break up blockage in the arteries, Smith said he's committed to staying off animal products for at least a year. Admitting that he's not a fan of fruits and vegetables, he described how a diet including falafel, hummus, beans, and the occasional vegan comfort food has resulted in wonderful health and loss of 32 pounds in less than 3 months. He added, chickpeas became a thing that saved my life.
He had a 100% artery blockage. So
yeah,
he had no choice.
I'm surprised to hear he's only committing for at least a year.
Well,
I'm sure that will change, but
I mean, once you get ingrained in a habit and you feel so great, why would you go back? Right? Why would you go back to McDonald's or whatever he was eating? And his daughter Harley Quinn is vegan as well, so I hope that she will support him and keep him on the path. He says he's not doing it for the animals, but
I know.
You know, people. This is the thing: is once you start on the vegan path, your mind starts to broaden. Mm-hmm. So maybe he will learn about animals in the future and stay committed for them, and not only his own health and the environment as well.
If you go to our website today, animalvoices.org, I've posted a really interesting video by Dr. Michael Greger, who goes through all of the 15 leading causes of death and explains how every animal product can contribute to that in a very scientific way, but also in a way that's easy to understand for the layperson. So animalvoices.org, check that out.
Listen to It Takes a Village, Thursdays, 4 p.m., a parenting show in the age of transparency. We reflect on current affairs, culture, activism, and pepper the hour with poignant songs that help explain the world. Join us every Thursday with your family on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
It takes a village. It takes a village to raise. It takes a village to raise a child.
We're now going to play a clip from the documentary Cowspiracy, which focuses on the environmental destruction associated with animal agriculture. This clip features statements by environmental scientists, and you can find the film Cowspiracy on Netflix.
So my calculations are that without using any gas or oil or fuel ever again from this day forward, that we would still exceed our maximum carbon equivalent greenhouse gas emissions, the 565 gigatons, by the year 2030. Without the electricity sector even, or energy sector even factoring in the equation, all simply by raising and eating livestock.
If you reduce the amount of methane emissions, the level in the atmosphere goes down fairly quickly, and within decades, as opposed to CO2, if you reduce the emissions to the atmosphere, you don't really see a signal in the atmosphere for 100 years or so.
Single largest contributor to every known environmental ill known to humankind. Deforestation, land use, water scarcity, the destabilization of communities, world hunger. The list doesn't stop. It's an environmental disaster that's being ignored by the very people who should be championing.
Free-living animals made up, 10,000 years ago, made up 99% of the biomass. And human beings, we only made up 1% of the biomass. Today, only 10,000 years later, which is really just a fraction of time, we human beings and the animals that we own as property make up 98% of the biomass. And wild, free-living animals make up only 2%. We basically completely stolen the world, the earth, from free-living animals to use for ourselves and our cows and pigs and chickens and factory farm fish, and the oceans have been even more devastated.
Concerned researchers of the loss of species agree that the primary cause of loss of species on our earth that we're witnessing is due to overgrazing and habitat loss from livestock production on land and by overfishing, which I call fishing, in our oceans.
We're in the middle of the largest mass extinction of species in 65 million years. The rainforest is being cut down at the rate of an acre per second. And the driving force behind all of this is animal agriculture, cutting down the forests to graze animals and to grow soybeans, genetically engineered soybeans to feed to the cows and pigs and chickens and factory farm fish.
91% of the loss of rainforest in the Amazon area thus far to date, 91% that's been destroyed is due to raising livestock.
And our next clip is featuring a very famous vegan doctor, Michael Greger, featured in the documentary What the Health. Again, you can also find that on Netflix. He's going to be speaking about the epidemic of antibiotic resistance related to animal agriculture. Let's hear that now.
In a keynote address last year, the Director General of the World Health Organization warned that we may be facing a future in which many of our miracle drugs no longer work. A post-antibiotic era means, in effect, an end to modern medicine as we know it. Things as common as strep throat or a child's scratched knee could once again kill. The Director General's prescription to avoid this catastrophe included the global call to restrict the use of antibiotics in food production to therapeutic purposes. In other words, only use antibiotics in agriculture to treat sick animals. In the United States, meat producers feed literally millions of pounds of antibiotics to farm animals who aren't sick just to promote growth or prevent disease in the often cramped, stressful, unhygienic conditions in industrial animal agriculture. The FDA estimates that 80% of the antimicrobial drugs sold in the U.S. every year now go to the meat industry. The discoverer of penicillin warned us back in the 40s that misuse could lead to resistance, but the meat industry didn't listen and started feeding drugs like penicillin to chickens by the ton. The Food and Drug Administration finally wised up to the threat in 1977 and proposed stopping the feeding of penicillin and tetracyclines to farm animals. That was 36 years ago. Since then, The combined political power of the factory farming and pharmaceutical industries has effectively thwarted any legislative or regulatory action, and this stranglehold shows no sign of breaking. We realized this reckless practice was a public health threat decades ago, and yet what's been done about it? Present farm animal production is concentrated in high-volume, crowded, stressful environments, made possible in part by the routine use of antibacterial drugs in the feed. The U.S. Congressional Office of Technology Assessment wrote as far back as 1979. Thus, the current dependency on low-level use of antibiotics to increase or maintain production, while of immediate benefit, also could be the Achilles heel of present production methods. Industrial operations use antibiotics as a crutch to compensate for the squalid conditions that now characterize much of modern agribusiness. The unnatural crowding of animals and their waste creates such a strain on the animals' immune systems that normal body processes like growth may be impaired. That's why a constant influx of antibiotics is thought to accelerate weight gain by reducing the infectious load. The problem is that each animal feeding on the antibiotic becomes a factory for the production and subsequent dispersion of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, offering a whole new meaning to the term factory farm.
He's one of my favorite doctors. We've had him on the show before, and Dr. Greger's website is nutritionfacts.org. I would suggest everyone make it a daily habit to just go on his website and watch a video on health. He puts out the latest studies on health and nutrition and the benefits of a vegan diet and the detrimental effects of a non-vegan diet. It's really interesting, up-to-date information.
And it's all scientifically based on studies that have been done. So he's commenting on scientific studies, mm-hmm. which is great. Like, you're getting that information disseminated. You can also sign up for his e-newsletter, which I do. So it gives all the week's new info in an email, and you can choose what you want to see. It's a great resource. It's all free.
Mm-hmm. And we have some events.
Yeah, we sure do. So there's so many events happening this weekend. So we'll start from the top and see how far I get here. Okay, so tomorrow morning, the Vancouver Chicken Save, which happens every Saturday morning, is happening. This is at 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse here locally in Vancouver, just at the corner of Commercial and East Hastings. You can join other activists there to bear witness to the suffering of thousands of chickens who are brought into that facility every day to be slaughtered, 10,000 a day, I believe. And you can stand there and hold a sign, educate the public. I think it's a great way to bring awareness to the general public who are usually not aware of what happens behind those closed doors. And when we're there on Saturdays, there's a big sign outside that we put up that says slaughterhouse. And I just think that that's just so effective because it makes people think. And with the numbers that we get out there, it's making people realize that they won't be alone if they want to stand up for compassion and justice. So after that, you can head over to the Vancouver Aquarium for the annual Empty the Tanks event, which takes place from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Vancouver Aquarium tomorrow. So this is an annual event that we do every year. So you might think, well, why do we need Empty the Tanks? Because there's no more cetaceans going to be allowed in captivity at Vancouver Aquarium. However, there is a loophole about this, as there always seems to be. So the Vancouver Aquarium, they want to make rescued cetaceans now their star performers, and they're even making room in the new tanks and displays that they plan to build beginning in the fall. So we need to step back and think about this, and the fight for justice for animals isn't over. So the 6th annual Empty the Tanks tomorrow, May 12th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Shortly after that, starting at 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., you can drive over to Surrey, and there will be the monthly Surrey Chicken Vigil there, which takes place at King George Boulevard at 73A Avenue, and they have a chicken vigil there as well. So so that tomorrow's a day for vigils and for standing up for animals, for sure. So Sunday is Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And we're having an event downtown at the Vancouver Art Gallery called Where Is My Mother? It's hosted by the organization Direct Action Everywhere. And what's happening there is, well, whether you are a human or another animal, the job of a mom is to raise babies who can protect and feed themselves and eventually leave the nest. And our fellow animals do not have any choice when they're separated, abused, and slaughtered against their will at a very young age. This basically happens to all animals in the agricultural industry, especially dairy cows, which is something that is close to my heart. So we're going to call for compassionate choices on Mother's Day. Head down to the Vancouver Art Gallery. Everyone's welcome. There will be signs if you need one. And yeah, it says here, if you're nervous about protesting, you can come observe or just hold a sign quietly. This is an event that's open for everyone.
Can we talk about the aquarium for a minute?
For sure.
Going to a protest at the Vancouver Aquarium catapulted me into animal rights activism and veganism. I was walking one day and I saw a sign for Empty the Tanks, which is the annual event at every aquarium in the world, on a lamppost. And I thought to myself, I didn't know there was a collective of people in this town who were opposed to captivity. I hate that place. I hate zoos. I hate all of it. And I had to go and meet them. And so I stood there and I read all their signs. There were hundreds of activists. A woman on the megaphone named Annalise was, she's the head of No Whales in Captivity, and she was explaining the history of that facility, and I was absolutely shocked. I learned so much that day. I met activists who eventually encouraged me to go vegan, and I got into full-time animal rights work, and it's completely changed my life for the better.
And since then, you've been one of the people who have henceforth been educating others. So it's
right.
A cycle. So once, once you get that information, I believe it's our moral duty to expand on that, and we need to act for the animals because there's no one else on this planet to act for them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of deception going on from the management at the aquarium. I encourage everyone to come out and get the real facts. Like I talked about at the beginning of the show, the media is not getting the real facts out there. So please
come
and learn.
The alternative media is at Animal Voices and
Exactly.
Co-op Radio.
Tune in every Friday at noon for the truth.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Anna Pippis is a Vancouver-based animal rights lawyer, strategist, and activist. She specializes in issues relating to farmed animals and the animal rights movement more broadly. She proudly serves as director of farmed animal advocacy for animal justice and as strategic advisor for We Animals, a project by Canadian award-winning photojournalist Joanne MacArthur. Anna believes these two organizations do an excellent job of making animal use and abuse visible and laying the groundwork for legal and political reform. Thanks for being on the Animal Voices show, Anna.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So I became vegan after watching undercover videos of industries that use animals and realizing that the so-called humane animal products I was buying were still contributing to unimaginable terror and suffering for animals. When did you go vegan and why?
I went vegan. I was vegetarian for a long time, for most of my life. I went vegetarian as a kid because I loved animals. But I really didn't know too much about farming. And I read in a book, Charlotte Montgomery's book, Blood Relations. Charlotte Montgomery is a Canadian journalist, and she wrote a book sort of cataloging all of the ways that we treat animals in Canada. She was really ahead of her time. The book is out of print now, but it's really, really well done. If you can find it secondhand, I highly recommend it. And in that book, she told the story of a bull, a downer bull, and a downed animal is an animal who can't walk. This is sort of common when animals are being shipped to slaughter. They're at the end of their lives, and many of them are injured or in other ways weakened. So sometimes they just collapse and can't walk. So this bull had a shattered hip. Bulls are male, these are male cows for people who might not know that. They're very large animals, more than 1,000 pounds. So to have a shattered hip on a large animal would be very, very painful. And of course they can't walk. So this poor bull was collapsed on the truck bringing him to slaughter, and the workers have no way of moving him. And so they're just sort of using electric prods and yelling at him and trying to get him to drag himself off the truck. And after many hours of him dragging his body up to the end of the truck, he smashed onto the ground below and dragged himself with much prodding from the workers inside the slaughterhouse, where the workers were now done for the day because it had taken so long. So the slaughterhouse was closing. And so the bull was just left on the floor of the slaughterhouse, you know, alone, alive, overnight to await the next day's slaughter to come and put the bull through the slaughter process. This completely broke my heart. And it also resonated with me in a way because it totally woke me up to the idea that when we use animals for profit, their welfare comes, of course, secondary, if at all. I mean, when we're using animals for profit, they're not our pets, they're not our beloved cats and dogs. So the idea that we can mass farm all of these many animals and also expect them to be treated well, it's just suddenly I opened my eyes and I realized that that was a big myth. And so sure enough, when I looked into it, I found that eggs and dairy, even the supposedly humane kind, were really very cruel in from my point of view.
Can you elaborate on that? Because you are the director of farmed animal advocacy for animal justice, and a lot of people think in Canada we don't treat animals inhumanely. You are the expert. Can you explain that?
Thanks for that. Well, sure. I mean, I see this all the time when I'm out walking around town, going to grocery stores, at the farmer's market. I see a lot of really nice sounding advertising and, you know, about eggs and about dairy. And I do find it very frustrating because I know it's misleading. Through my job, I see a lot of what goes on inside of farms. I go through hours of footage. I have, you know, I follow all of the investigations. I follow these industries very closely. And what we see time and time again is that animals are being badly, you know, neglected. So here's the thing. I mean, when even in a best case scenario, there are still very terrible things built into the system. So let's take dairy for an example, because a lot of dairy is billed as being, you know, organic and these family run farms and we love our animals. Well, in the dairy industry, for example, cows are bred to produce so much milk, 10 times more milk than they would normally produce in nature, because that's sort of what the profitability of the dairy industry requires, is lots of milk. So they're bred to produce so much milk that that it's very taxing on their udders, and they often develop an infection called mastitis, which is an inflammation of their mammary glands. That's also something that mothers get, human mothers get. I've had it. It's very painful, especially when it gets bad, and it does get very bad for cows. In fact, research from right here in BC shows that on any given BC farm, there will be up to 30% of the cows will have mastitis at one time. So this is a common problem. The next thing that happens to these animals is, of course, they're impregnated, because cows don't lactate unless they give birth, which is something that we all know, but I think we don't really put sort of two and two together and realize, well, cows don't just produce milk all the time. I mean, they're not like these just lactating species of animals. No, they produce milk after they've had babies. And of course, on farms, the babies can't take the milk. The milk is for humans. So the babies are taken away from their mothers, and it's typically done immediately after birth. And this is, in fact, recommended by the industry, is to take the calves away at birth so that the animals don't have too much time to bond. Well, cows excrete oxytocin at birth. Oxytocin is the same hormone that we humans have at birth, and it promotes bonding. So it is very agonizing for cows, both mothers and babies, to be separated in this way. And this is on, I mean, we're talking still the very best organic, humane certified, SPCA certified farms. And then, you know, on and on it goes. The animals are, you know, they're not, again, they're not pets, so they're often neglected, it's expensive to call the vet. I mean, this is going to vary from farm to farm for sure. But anyways, at the end of their lives, after about 4 to 5 years of back-to-back pregnancies, which is taxing, the cows become very weak and they're sent to slaughter, which is a fraction of their natural lifespan. And when you see cows going to slaughter, you can see they're very weak, emaciated, frail, skinny, because of the back-to-back pregnancies and producing so much milk has been so, so demanding on their bodies.
Well, now many people think that a vegan diet is lacking in nutrients, and pregnant moms tend to be extremely concerned about having a healthy pregnancy. So what would you like them to know as someone who's had two vegan pregnancies?
Yeah, so the experts experts in nutrition are dietitians, and the Dietitians Associations of Canada and of the United States have positioned statements saying that well-planned vegan diets are appropriate for all stages of life, including pregnancy and breastfeeding and childhood and beyond. So we know that we can get all that we need on a healthy, well-planned vegan diet. Now, the key here is on well-planned. I think a lot of people say, oh, well, it's, you know, too much effort to think about, you know, what nutrients to get and how to get them. But the reality is we should all be planning out our diets. We live in a time and age when we have access to a huge variety of, you know, nutrient-less food, and we can't just sort of like rely on our eating habits in order to get the nutrition that we need. So everybody should be working on consuming a well-planned diet. This is not a vegan-specific thing. So sure, it takes a little bit of time investment up front to figure out what to get and where to get it, but everyone should be doing that anyway. And a vegan diet done well is, you know, in a lot of people's opinion, one of the healthiest, if not the healthiest way to eat. We're seeing research coming out all the time from reputable institutions. Dr. Walter Willett of Harvard is the most cited nutritionist in the world, and he says recently that a vegetarian diet has been underestimated for its effect. And Walter Willett is a big proponent of not consuming dairy, or at least not consuming so much dairy. He says there's actually, we've had really well documented health, negative health impacts from consuming too much dairy, and he's a big proponent of having these, you know, huge quantities of dairy removed from international food guides. So we're seeing more and more that people who are vegan, plant-based, who eat a healthy whole foods plant-based diet, they are living longer, they have lower rates of chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, that kind of thing. And just on a day-to-day, I am living experience, you have energy, you're vibrant, you feel good. And it's so then it's a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, like you have the energy to be able to make these good decisions for your body and for your life.
And I find it's actually faster and easier to cook vegan food than before when I was cooking meat or anything like that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think for a lot of people it's challenging at first because they need to learn new habits and you sort of have to rethink how you approach the kitchen. But for sure, I mean, over time, opening a can of legumes is a lot faster than having to cook meat to the right temperature because you can't undercook it because then you'll get food poisoning. I mean, it's, yeah, mm-hmm. I think a lot of vegans find it sort of lower stress and lower maintenance for sure.
So what kind of foods did you eat while pregnant to ensure a healthy pregnancy, and what kind of supplements were you taking?
I took a prenatal vitamin, which is recommended for everyone to take, and I also took an omega-3, a plant-based omega-3 vitamin, again recommended for all pregnant women to take. And then I usually drink smoothies. Actually, you know what, the truth is my diet didn't really change much during pregnancy. I just ate what I normally ate and continue to eat, just more, a little more of it. So I usually have a smoothie in the morning with frozen fruit, frozen berries, flax seeds, leafy greens like kale, frozen banana, that kind of thing. In the winter, usually a little bit of ginger, and I find that helps me keep the colds and flus away. And then for lunch, usually a salad or a sandwich or something really simple that I can eat on the go or just kind of grab and put together from the fridge, or leftovers. Leftovers is a big one. And then for dinners, it's usually things like stir fry, pastas, tacos, Mexican food, bowls. For people who aren't yet vegan, maybe you don't know of the wonder of the bowl, but the bowl is sort of our answer to meat and potatoes. It's a grain bowl, so you've got a base of grains, legume like black beans or lentils or something like that, then veggies on top of that, and then a sauce of some kind, and then toppings. So that's a big staple around here.
So your two boys, Harlan and Alistair, they're now 5 and 2 years old. What kinds of foods are they eating? Kids can be pretty picky, and your kids have always had a healthy diet, so there's really no issue with them, is there?
Yeah, no, my kids have both been vegan since conception because they were conceived to two vegan parents, so they're comprised only of plants. And they eat pretty well. Now, healthy eating is not necessarily vegan eating. I mean, you can definitely be an unhealthy vegan, but I also very much value eating healthy foods and raising healthy eaters. So I do see it as our responsibility as parents to raise children who are healthy eaters, and it's something that we do have to teach them. So it's something that I read a lot about and made sure that I was sort of well equipped to be able to raise children who could eat a diversity of foods and eat, you know, tolerate a little bit of spices and eat their vegetables and that kind of and stuff like that. So, so one thing is that they were exposed to all of these strong flavors in utero, and that research shows that that does help children develop a broader palate. I was eating international foods. I was eating Indian foods and Ethiopian foods, and these are foods that have a lot of different spices and flavors. And then through my breast milk, they were being exposed to these strong flavors as well, and these flavors do go through breast milk. Another thing we know from research that this is a great way to develop healthy eaters. So from the beginning, they were being exposed to these strong flavors, and then they eat what the family eats, but with some sort of modification. So sometimes they won't eat. I mean, they're not going to typically sit down and have a salad, although I know some younger kids will. But if we're having a bowl, mine might be really heavy on the greens, on the lettuces or whatever, and theirs might be more heavy on the cooked veggies, like something like broccoli, and then more grains. So it'll be like brown rice, peas, and broccoli, and then I'll have those things in smaller quantities and then a huge pile of lettuce on the top. So we do make some modifications based on sort of preferences and what little teeth can handle. And also children have small stomachs, so they can't we need to fill them up on calorie-dense foods with lots of good fats. So there are some separate considerations like that. But for the most part, they eat what we eat.
Yeah, I often see you posting images of your kids' lunches, and it's just maybe some apricot and some cashews, and you often make tofu in your iron skillet, which is really nice. You make hummus and pita, all really healthy, pure plant-based foods.
Yeah, and it's all just really simple stuff. I think people think, like, it's, you know, going to be so complicated and you need these snack packs. Like, we're not buying, like, all these like fancy baby foods and kid foods and like packages. It's just like, you know, cutting up an apple, cutting up some carrots or a cucumber, cutting up a raw pepper, you know, putting an orange in their pack. Sometimes schools don't allow nuts, so, you know, we pack tofu cubes or hummus or refried beans in a quesadilla. Well, not a quesadilla, refried beans in a tortilla. There's no queso in it. But, yeah, just really sort of, like, simple stuff that's easy to put together. Kids like that kind of food. It's easy to pack. It's really fast to put together because you're just taking, like, raw fruits and veggies and putting them in a box.
Yeah, it is really quick and easy. Ever since I went vegan, my food prep is just, it makes it easier for me to stop eating out because I used to use the excuse I didn't have time to prep food, but it's just so fast. When you're vegan.
Yeah, we rarely eat out and we rarely rely on packaged foods, and I find that it integrates well into our day.
And you're
it's
busy.
Just learning new habits.
Yeah, and you are very busy. If you can do it, anyone can do it.
I think so. I mean, I do enjoy cooking, so there's that, but I'm really not doing much. I mean, that's like kind of what I'm trying to show people is this is really, I don't have time to make gourmet meals and, you know, making like multi-hour dishes. I'm just like throwing stuff together in 20 or 30 minutes for dinner. And I find that it's easier and simpler than takeout, and it's healthier and we feel good. And yeah, I think anyone can do it.
And you're raising compassionate children in more ways than just their diet. They're fortunate to have two parents who use their law degrees to help animals. So can you tell us about the ethics that you instill in your children and how you've witnessed the presence of their compassionate values in their daily lives?
Sure. So for us, it's just kind of part of what our family does and what our family stands for and believes in. And there's a lot of values that we instill in our children about being kind, about being humble, about being conscious of how, you know, how we impact the world. And so for us, veganism just fits really seamlessly into that. We're, you know, we just talk to them about it as like, we're kind to animals. It's important to us to treat animals the way that we would want to be treated. So we don't eat them. And that for them has made a lot of sense. I think Harlan, when he was younger, my eldest when he was younger, he's 5 now, had some question, like it was confusing to him, like, why isn't everyone vegan? And that was like, that's kind of my question too. So I didn't always have a good answer. And it was sort of, you know, it's really complicated, right? Because the reason that adults aren't vegan it's not because they're bad people, it's because they have these habits or they these beliefs or whatever. And so it's kind of like really hard to explain that to a 3-year-old. So I just sort of landed on saying like, well, good people do bad things. But we can't, you know, we can't hold it against people. They're still learning. All we can do is, you know, eat our happy, healthy vegan food and try to teach people about why we do it. What we do when they're open to hearing about it, kind of thing. And that seemed to work out well. And, you know, it's just something that they do. And I think, well, we're lucky. We live in a bit of a bubble here in East Vancouver. A lot of families are at least vegetarian or open to veganism or have some knowledge and experience around it. So, so I think it works really well and it makes total sense to children.
And I remember walking Harlan to preschool or daycare with you one day, and tell me what it said on his little cloth lunch bag.
Oh, that must have been a vegan police lunch bag. Oh, what does it say? I don't remember what it says. What does it say?
I think it said, I don't eat my pals, or nobody dies from my meal or something.
Yeah, oh, no, the lunch bag is, yeah, it's these lovely organic lunch bags from Heather Doherty at the Vegan Police. No animals harmed in the making of this lunch.
I love it. You've got the message printed on your kids' t-shirts and their lunch bags.
Yeah, no, and they choose them too. They love animals. They want to, because they see, like, they think that mommy's job is helping animals, so they see that and they want to get into it too. So they want to help animals, and they say, well, we should be vegan, and people should be vegan, and we should talk to people about being nice to animals, which is all their stuff. So it's cute.
And Harlan, your 5-year-old, goes up to people at parks and asks them if they're vegan, right?
He doesn't like go up. He doesn't like chase people down. But like, he's very friendly, so he's often sort of like engaging with people and chatting with people at the playground and making friends. And that he's a social butterfly. And so one of his questions, you know, just like we ask questions getting to know people, what's your name? How old are you? When's your birthday? One of his questions is, are you vegan or not vegan? Which I think is a great way of putting it.
That's really cute. So what advice do you have for busy, overwhelmed parents who want to make this transition to a passionate lifestyle, but they don't know how? And maybe you can mention your Instagram and Facebook page here.
Sure. Well, I think one thing before even making any changes is to just like reflect on like your relationship with food. I think for a lot of people, food can be an addiction. It's eating out. It's cheese. I could never give up cheese or bacon. You know, if you're saying you could never give something out, consider that. Like, what does that mean? You can't give it up. I think that for many of us, food can be an addiction, but we don't really recognize it as such. It's sort of like it's sort of like a socially acceptable addiction. So just to consider, like, what is your relationship like with food, and is food controlling you? And then I would also say, like, you don't need to go sort of vegan overnight or nothing at all. Like, if your stumbling block is like, oh, but I can't imagine like not sitting down with my grandmother at Thanksgiving and like eating the turkey with the family. Like, I just can't imagine that. Oh, I guess I can't go vegan. Like, no, like, so just like make the changes that you can, and maybe just start by learning one new dish that you like and that works well with your family's life, that integrates with what you're already doing. So if it's, maybe it's learning how to make like a really good lentil curry, which is like the easiest thing in the world to make, and you can make a lot of it at once, so it freezes well. So learn how to make one thing that you enjoy, and then once you've made that, you know, make it regularly and put it into your routine. Then just learn to make another thing. Learn how to make a tofu stir fry, or how to make black bean tacos, or something that is going to work well for you and that you're going to enjoy. And then just basically crowd out the other stuff. Just work towards it bit by bit in a way that feels like you're adding abundance to your life rather than taking things away that you love.
Mm-hmm. And your Facebook and your Instagram is easyanimal-free.
Easy Animal Free. So on Instagram, it's at Easy Animal Free. On Facebook, it's Easy Animal Free. So yeah, hyphenated. Animal Free is hyphenated. I just sort of cross post from Instagram to Facebook, but I'm more active on Instagram. And I also do a lot of cooking in my stories just to show people like what the steps look like in putting meals together, and just sharing a lot about like little things like what we're having for breakfast, what we eat in a day, what we're packing for preschool snack, you know, just like little tips here and there. Yeah, so Instagram stories, I think, are people find them useful to picturing what it looks like. And I really just share, it's called Easy Animal Free because it's animal free and it's easy. I'm sharing really simple, practical meal solutions that we really do. And I'm usually sharing at least one little thing every day, whether it's like cooking dinner or just, you know, sharing my simple lunch or something like that. So I think that it can help people to picture what it looks like and to get practical ideas so that you're not getting these long recipes and then at the end of the workday you're like, I just don't have 45 minutes to like do this complicated thing. So yeah, so just really simple tips.
And so you do cook a lot with tofu, and I just want you to address the estrogen myth with tofu so we can put that to rest once and for all for our listeners.
Yeah, we eat soy as a regular part of our diet. I mean, not every day, although not because of health concerns. We just eat a varied diet. So if you, for some reason, can't eat soy, there's plenty of beans and lentils and everything else that you can eat. Hummus, we eat a lot of hummus. But soy is amazing. Soy is a complete protein. It's very versatile. You can make it into tofu, which is used making the same process as cheese. So you make a milk and then you curdle it. You can make soy milk. It's very nutritious. Soy milk is the most nutritious of the plant milks, especially for growing little ones, because it has a good protein and fat content. It's, you know, it's environmentally friendly. Soy is an incredible little legume. And so for sure, we use it as part of our diet. I think that there's a misconception about the phytoestrogens in soy because people hear phytoestrogen and hear estrogen. Well, the reality is that, first of all, phytoestrogens are in a lot of plant foods, including coffee and the much touted healthy flax seeds. All kinds of things. So we're kind of singling out soy in a way that is a little bit arbitrary. And the other thing is that if people are concerned about estrogen, what they should really be avoiding is cow's milk, because cow's milk contains like actual estrogen from pregnant mammals. So, and there are sort of like, it's a growing health concern, I think, the estrogen that's found in these pregnant cows on modern dairy farms. And we're seeing a lot of like actual hormone issues related to dairy consumption. So some researchers have linked dairy to hormonal problems like acne and early puberty and, you know, all kinds of things. So to the extent that somebody might be concerned about dietary hormones, I would say the first place to look definitely is dairy. But the phytoestrogens found in soy are actually health protective. They're beneficial, and they're something that we actually want to be consuming.
Yeah, it is really a myth that I think is, well, most people think is made up by the animal agriculture industry to try to get us to stick to their products instead of the plant-based products.
I think that soy is a real threat to the meat industry just because it's like meat in a lot of ways, like being a complete protein, you know, being able to like form the sort of like the center of a meal and all this kind of stuff. But it's like, it's cheaper, it's more environmentally friendly, it's, you know, better for animals. So certainly if I were the meat industry, I would definitely want research to come out showing that soy is bad.
And then just one more thing I want to touch on that you may not mention in your Easy Animal Free videos or photos and recipes is the importance to supplement with B12 and vitamin D in the wintertime. So you do give these things to your kids, and it's absolutely imperative, right?
Yeah, it is. And I just wanted to say one thing about that, because some people will say, like, well, you know, vegan diet can't be natural. Like, you have to take supplements. Everybody takes supplements. In this day and age, we eat iodized salt. Cow's milk is fortified with vitamin D. You know, we're not living in a natural environment. We're living in these urban environment, our food system is sanitized, it's tracked halfway across the world. In a truly natural way of living environment, we would be consuming B12 all throughout the day, because B12 is really just found in soil. And B12 actually is only even found in like cow meat, like beef, whatever it's called, cow muscle tissue.
Flesh, yeah.
It's found in there because their feed is fortified with vitamin B12. So you can take the vitamin B12 fortification and you can like channel it through a cow and then eat the cow flesh, or you can just take the supplement directly yourself. So don't sort of like fall into the misguided thinking that, well, you know, it can't be natural if you're taking B12. Yes, my kids take a multivitamin. We drink fortified soy milk. We eat nutritional yeast, a lot of nutritional yeast, which contains vitamin B12. So So yeah, it's really simple to just sort of incorporate that. We'll often have a family smoothie and just drop the vitamins right into the smoothie so we can fortify our own. And for vitamin D, it's absolutely essential in the winter. And this is true for people who consume cows, who are non-vegan. They consume cow's milk that also has vitamin D added to it. So vitamin D we get from the sun, not from really any animal foods unless they're added in. So this is not a knock against a vegan diet.
No, this is a knock against Canadian winters.
Absolutely. Exactly. Not enough sun. We're designed to live near the equator.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show again, Anna. You're always a wealth of information. And where can people find out more about your legal advocacy work?
Oh, thanks, Jen. Okay, so people can go to animaljustice.ca, also on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, wherever you're at, to see what Animal Justice is up to, and sign up for the mailing list. The mailing list is the best way that we have to communicate with people. We send out a monthly newsletter that's sort of full of information about what's going on in the Canadian animal rights scene and what we're up to. And we also issue like action alerts. So if people can contact a politician or sign a petition or something like that, we periodically send out little things that people can do. So yes, sign up at animaljustice.ca.
And that's great. A lot of people think petitions don't work, but they do. They really do. We're hearing it from a lawyer today, right?
I think they do. I mean, petitions can't be the only thing that people do, but they're totally essential because numbers are what show politicians and the media that an issue matters. So if a petition has, you know, many thousands of signatures, that's a way of communicating that this issue is important. So they're totally essential as part of our broader activism.
Great. I really do love your email updates, and I'm so impressed with the amount of cases that you take on in defense of animals. And if anyone ever wants to know what kind of a charity to give their money to, I always recommend Animal Justice because they really can get a lot done when you've got lawyers working to change laws.
Thank you. Cool.
We'll talk to you again soon, Anna. Thanks for being on the show today.
Okay, thanks. Sounds good. Thanks so much, Jen.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Thanks so much for that interview. I always love hearing from Anna, Jen, and those were really great questions that you asked.
Thank you.
So please join us on our next show on Friday, May the 18th. Did you know that May is International Respect for Chickens Month? And I love chickens. Next week, we're going to be having a show on that theme and on the week after as well. So please do tune in for that. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can read our show blog there with detailed links. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and we're on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either via Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And if you have any upcoming events or campaigns or anything that you would like to have us cover on the show, send us an email or post it. You can send us an email through Facebook as well. We answer that. So today's closing song is Delicate by Taylor Swift. Thank you for being in touch with us today. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock. Thanks for listening. Remember to be kind to the animals.
Listen for the best. My reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me. We can't make any promises now, can we, babe? But you can make me drink. Dive bar on the east side, where you at? Phone lights at my nightstand in the black. Come here, you can meet me in the back. Dark jeans and your Nikes, look at you. Oh damn, never seen that color blue. Just think of the fun things we could do. Reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me. Yeah, I want you. We can't make any promises now, can we, babe? But you can make me drink. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my head? Cause I know that it's delicate. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it too soon to do this yet? Cause I know that it's delicate. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it too soon to do this yet? Cause I know that it's delicate. Isn't it, 'cause I'm